My son was a middle schooler in Vermont, and he was a victim of what we thought was traditional type bullying at first, you know, typical name calling kind of stuff.
On October 7th, 2003, 13-year-old Ryan Halligan committed suicide. His father, John Halligan, remembers what happened.
He was picked on primarily in the beginning for his perceived learning disabilities and his lack of athleticism. You know, we dealt with it in a very traditional way, I think, as some parents did, especially back then, where, you know, you tell your kid to stand up for themselves, either walk away or give it back to him. And it got to a point where he wanted us to teach him how to fight, how to defend himself. And so he had a fight with the kid one day, put him in his place, and we thought that was the end of it. Unfortunately, my son wanted to become friends with him. And in developing that friendship, he told him something that he shouldn't have told him. And the kid took the information and started spreading rumors that my son was gay at school and also online. And he did not tell us about this. And then he spent the whole summer of 2003 trying to deal with this rumor. And part of his strategy, from what I can see on the computer, was that he approached one of the so-called pretty popular girls from the school online to try to get a relationship going with her. She ended up pretending to like him online. And then when school started up, she told him that he was a loser, that she didn't want anything to do with him, and that she was only joking around. And it was a few weeks after that my son had killed himself.
Ryan Halligan killed himself in the early days of social media, before Facebook, MySpace, and cell phones were ubiquitous among teens. His father realized then that there was a potential problem with growing online social interaction. John Halligan wrote and pushed for enactment of Vermont's Bully Prevention Law, Act 117, that creates new procedures and policies for schools.
In this time frame, you know, Ryan's school and all the other schools, from what I can tell in Vermont, when you picked up their handbook or their policy statements, they had no mention of bullying whatsoever. And that didn't make a lot of sense to me. You know, it's not a school in the world where you bring adolescents together that you don't have this issue to some extent, and not to be clear about what the behavior is, how are we going to prevent it, and how are we going to respond to it didn't make any sense to me. So by getting this law passed in Vermont, I believe what we accomplished, and also in all the other states that have brought in laws, is that the schools are taking a harder look at this issue.
Vermont's bully prevention law was signed by then-Governor Jim Douglas in May 2004. Under a new legislative mandate, this year, current Education Commissioner Armando Villaseca formed the Harassment, Hazing, and Bullying Prevention Advisory Council. He says the group will support and guide schools as they adopt bullying prevention policies.
One of the main goals of this advisory council is to bring attention to the issue. Quite often, adults who have not been in school in a long time look at these things and maybe downplay them. So we're providing some supports for schools and also letting them know what the expectations are for all students in their school.
In northern New York State, the Safe Schools Healthy Students Coalition works to diminish bullying. One of their efforts is an I Stand Against Bullying video competition. Keysville Elementary School students won an award for their depiction of bullying in school.
That'll show her.
It starts out me typing up a message on Facebook about how Abby sucks her thumb and stuff like that.
Victoria Biot was 11 years old, in sixth grade, and a member of Students Against Violence Everywhere when she portrayed the bully in the school video.
It finally shows us in school, and everyone's pointing and laughing at her and stuff. And Abby's about to break out in tears. And Avery goes, "What's wrong?" And she goes, "She just keeps posting mean things about me on Facebook, and I can't get away from it," and stuff like that. And then Chris stands up to me and goes, "You know what, Vicky, that's not nice." And they walked into a different classroom.
Victoria, why do you think kids are out there bullying?
Because they want the satisfaction, but everything you say and do can scar a person for life.
Victoria's mother, Maxine Payette, allowed her daughter to participate in the video because she felt it would send students an important message.
You have to take the power away from the bully by standing up for the person that's being bullied. I think that that needs to be stressed to students because so many kids are afraid to stand up because their attitude is, well, I'm just glad it's him and not me. But if the kids all band together against the bully, then the bullying will stop. And I think that's the message that schools need to get out to the kids.
Sisters Cassadia and Shanzi Carter Martinez attended different schools, and both were bullied.
I couldn't grow in height. I've always been short. And so I grew everywhere else and just looked pudgier than everybody. So that just kind of became a target for all my classmates. And my mom actually caught me in the closet one day when I was actually trying to figure out how I could just end everything.
Mine started single-handedly with this one boy. I guess his whole goal was to just hurt me, and then he got the rest of his friends in on it.
And when she started directing her anger towards me, it started to catch on, and then I went to my mom. I didn't want her to get to where I got to with my bullying.
Turner Falls, Massachusetts-based The Responsive Classroom helps teachers with academic and social issues. Program developer Mike Anderson, who has been a public elementary school teacher for 15 years, says the stereotypical physical bullying is actually least common. What Anderson has noticed is exclusion, verbal, and cyber abuse between kids.
It often happens in places like the cafeteria, or out at recess, or in the hallways. You know, small mean behaviors that might go unnoticed by adults, but which can really have a pretty profound impact on how kids view school and how they learn.
The Responsive Classroom has published How to Bully-Proof Your Classroom, which Anderson notes found the majority of bullying behaviors in schools is missed.
One of the statistics is from a classic Canadian study in which kids were being videotaped at recess. And the researchers told them, we want to see how kids play, so just go play normally. And the researchers, as they watched and reviewed the videotapes, saw incidents of bullying happening on average of once every 7 minutes. When they asked the teachers, how often do you respond when bullying incidents happen, the teachers said nearly all the time. And in fact, they only responded 4% of the time. So I think what's so hard about this is that oftentimes what adults see from a distance is different from what's happening up close. And instead of sort of standing back and observing from a distance, we really need to get ourselves in the middle of the action so we can make sure that we're taking care of kids.
Student Victoria Biot agrees that school officials must be more engaged and provide better monitoring.
Most of it happens where a teacher can't see it. I mean, one of my older brothers got dumped in a trash can in a locker room, for Pete's sake, and there was no monitor. No one's paying attention to anything, and they're not monitoring any of this stuff.
Cassadia and Shanzi Carter-Martinez both describe officials in their schools as inept when dealing with their plight.
They have things in place to help with the bullying.
Yeah, opportunities.
But if when a child goes to the administration and says, I need help, the administration says, I didn't see it.
When it was in fifth grade and it was first starting, I went to my fifth grade teacher, and my teacher looked at me and said, I don't want to hear any of your pathetic excuses.
It's hard to walk by the principal of your school and know that she saw you crying, she saw you leaving school early because you were terrified to be there, and that you could have like died, you could have committed suicide or something to get out of it, and to know that she didn't care.
In my high school, there was always this one teacher that would stand outside of his classroom so that he could see what was going on in the hallways. I didn't see anybody else in that high school who would do that.
Mike Anderson has found that too many adults think bullying is normal behavior by youth. He believes that while laws serve to increase awareness and put protocols in place, it's parents and educators together that must act to create meaningful changes.
Kids are always going to need to sort out social struggles. Bullying is about social power. We can't think that we'll just implement a couple of good strategies and then the problem will go away. I think it's something that we'll always have to keep an eye on and make sure that we're really being proactive about.
I'm Pat Bradley, WAMC News.
The taunts, insults, intimidations, and threats hurled on the playground can now be found on Facebook, in chat rooms, and conveyed via text messages.
I've seen people like fighting, and I've heard of people like killing each other and killing themselves over stuff like that.
It's outrageous, like what teenagers go through. And then, like, some stuff you can never get away from, like rumors, you never get away from that.
As the means of communication and social interaction by young people change, bullies have found new ways to brutalize their victims.
The internet is a place that's not that different from a hallway or a bathroom or a carpool lane where kids left unattended are going to have conflict, are going to have drama, as they often call it.
Rachel Simmons, an educator, bullying expert, and author of the book Odd Girl Out, The Hidden Culture of Aggression in Girls, explains that conflict, which goes on and on, unresolved, can be considered bullying, especially when it's between people with different social status.
Let's say a girl angers two or three other girls, and those two or three other girls go online and they start to post nasty comments on the target's wall. They say things like, you know, you're ugly, you're disgusting, no one likes you, you know, I wish you were never born, or we're going to get you after school. There can often be threats of conflict in real life. These girls may also be texting her at the same time, similar messages. Because it's happening in the public venue of a social network like Facebook, other students are seeing this. They may jump into the fray. They may make comments, which of course exacerbates the humiliation of the target. And this can go on for a long time.
Simmons says cyberbullying appears more common among girls than boys.
For girls, there's often a seamless integration between their online and real lives. And so what happens in the hallway at 1 hour, in the second hour, can then move into texting, and later that night can go on to Facebook, where when you're not looking someone in the eye, you can say a lot of terrible things that you would never say face to face.
20% of youth bullying victims report they were bullied online, a number that has held steady for the last few years, according to the Cyberbullying Research Center.
Cyberbullying is not spiraling out of control. You know, it's not this epidemic that it's sometimes painted as, but it is affecting a meaningful proportion of youth.
Samir Hinduja is co-director of the Cyberbullying Research Center and an associate professor of criminal justice at Florida Atlantic University.
When it comes to bullying and cyberbullying, we definitely still see that the percentages for bullying are higher than cyberbullying. And I'm not really seeing a shift, you know, from, let's say, the playground or classroom or hallways to online. It's just another environment to which harassment is taking place, and many youth are capitalizing on the fact that they're proficient with the technology and can quickly go online to be mean or hurtful.
Cyberbullying seems to reach its peak with children in the middle school grades. As children grow older, most develop more self-confidence and focus on academic success and extracurricular activities. Also, there's a growing awareness that what is said in cyberspace can follow someone as they attempt to get into college or get a job. Victims of cyberbullying can feel as if there is no escape. Bullies can be emboldened by physical distance and anonymity, according to Elizabeth Stassinos, a bullying prevention expert and professor at Westfield State University.
More good things are happening online for kids, and enjoyable things, games, information, news, than there are negative things, just like in real life, you know? On the other hand, for a kid who has other risk factors, and I think this is true in person as it is in cyberspace, with kids who have other risk factors, I think that the online world can become a very distorted place where they can feel both very afraid and they can feel like there's no consequences to their anger.
Bullying can be a gateway to other bad behavior, including hate crimes and domestic violence. Victims can have academic problems, truancy, and juvenile delinquency. Also, youth gang violence is being instigated on social media. According to Tony Pettaway, the violence prevention coordinator for the Department of Health and Human Services in Springfield, Massachusetts.
When young people are being threatened or psychologically bullied via the old-fashioned put up your dukes, or basically I can text and terrorize you and your family. We want to put an end to that.
The New York City Police Department recently announced a doubling of the size of its gang unit to monitor social media for clues to turf battles and other trouble. Daryl Moss, a mayoral aide in Springfield, Massachusetts, who specializes in youth issues, says bullying and gangs have always been closely linked.
We have young people who have always joined gangs because bullying. If I'm getting beat up, I go grab all the neighborhood buddies and we kind of align ourselves.
The experts agree that when it comes to preventing cyberbullying, it is up to adults to teach children proper digital citizenship. But just staying current with technology can be daunting, concedes Gianna Allentuck, an adjustment counselor in the Springfield schools.
I personally and professionally feel behind the curve. It's just every time you turn around, every second, there's a new kind of technology or software or program or Twitter and tweeting and Facebooking. And I just learned of one the other day. I can't even remember the name, but I remember it's like just another way for kids to be able to either say mean things or pass mean pictures. So it's definitely, I do feel behind the curve.
49 states have bullying laws, but just 15 include cyberbullying. Some states' attempts to criminalize cyberbullying have run into claims of free speech protection. Bill Newman, director of the Western Massachusetts Legal Office of the ACLU, says existing laws are clear about when free speech does not apply.
I think this notion that cyberbullying is different, at least analytically, than other kinds of bullying and threats, I don't think that's true. And I think the framework to look at this is what would be a criminal act in any event, whether or not it happens through electronic media or social media or email or Facebook or Twitter or any other way, would it be criminal if it happened face-to-face?
All state bullying laws direct schools to have prevention and intervention policies and punishments. 8 states, including Massachusetts and New York, include off-campus behavior.
And that is significant because now it says to educators, you are on the hook for making sure that you are aware, or at least don't turn a blind eye to this kind of communication when you have reason to know about it. I don't think it says you have some obligation to act as the police force of cyberspace.
Newman says courts have ruled school officials can sanction off-campus behavior if it results in a disruption in school. School prevention and intervention policies typically do not differentiate between cyberbullying and traditional bullying. Connie Mahoney, the director of Safe Schools Programs for the Springfield Public Schools, says cyberbullying is included in staff training and the anti-bullying curriculum.
It's a challenge. It's a balancing act. We want them to use technology, but, you know, there has to be regulations around that. Right. We just have to look at the students as the individuals that they are, you know, and take a look at each student, each classroom, one at a time, and give the students the support that they need.
If you witness cyberbullying, you can report it as a violation of the terms of service that govern access to most social media sites. Elizabeth Stasinos, a bullying prevention expert and professor at Westfield State University, believes a grassroots campaign akin to Mothers Against Drunken Driving can stop cyberbullying.
The dangers of the cyber world are real in terms of the kids' formation of identity, in terms of how they're harmed, in terms of how they think of their peers as being frenemies. All that stuff is a real danger, you know, that kids get a warped social sense, that they're not going to be able to achieve their goals, that they're not going to be able to live in community, you know. And I'm being an optimistic anthropologist here and saying that I think we can achieve healthy communities and healthy schools.
I'm Paul Tuthill, WAMC News.
Tyler Gregory, a freshman at Wright State University in Dayton, Ohio, knows firsthand what makes a bully tick.
I was doing it not to make her hurt, but to get laughs, like to build me up.
As a high school student in South Charleston, Ohio, just west of the state capital of Columbus, Tyler and his friends began bullying a girl from another school via the internet. While their bullying didn't end in tragedy, Tyler says it was only after his recognition of the direst consequences that he realized what he was doing.
There was one time a friend of ours took the phone, and it was a girl, and she said, you know, go kill yourself. And when I actually heard that, that's when it clicked. That's when it really clicked. I was like, if she actually went and killed herself, you know, I would have to live with that guilt. All my friends would have to live with that guilt. And there's no going back once something like that happens.
Bridgewater State University professor Dr. Elizabeth Englander, director of the Massachusetts Aggression Reduction Center, which conducts bullying research and provides training to faculty and students at K-12 schools, says many bullies don't realize they're being abusive.
Sometimes children do realize what they're doing because they're testing the ground, they're engaging in the behavior deliberately to show other peers that they are powerful, and so they may be aware of it, but I think also frequently children don't view what they've done as bullying. And this is problematic because a lot of times we talk about bullying prevention in school and we talk about bullying as an issue in school, but what may be happening is that some of the children who bully, and possibly even some of the most persistent bullies, are children who are listening to those messages and are saying to themselves, that doesn't describe me.
As for the motivations for bullying, Englander says they can vary based on the level of individual involvement.
Like all abuse behaviors, ultimately it's really about power and control. Kids are very motivated to gain social status through bullying. In general, children recognize that bullying is about power and control, and overwhelmingly they cite that as the most important motive. And I think ultimately it is the most important motive. But children who bully themselves tend to see anger as their motive rather than power. So they see the problem that they have with other kids as a sort of social relationship problem that really has to do with them becoming angry at the person. I think that anger isn't necessarily the ultimate cause, but I think it's possibly a trigger and maybe a very important one.
Dr. Marlene Sandstrom, professor of psychology at Williams College, conducts research focusing on adolescent social relationships and the factors that can lead to bullying behaviors.
Psychologists are really interested in developmental pathways, and it turns out that bullying is a really complex problem, and there's no single pathway to get there. I can't tell a single story that would explain how a young child would become a bully, but there are a lot of risk factors that accumulate and make it more likely that a child would engage in bullying.
Among those risk factors, according to Sandstrom, are inherent or inherited personality traits.
Early temperament plays a role for sure. Some children just come into the world having difficulty regulating their feelings from a very early age. Some children inherit a tendency toward impulsivity. And then as children get a little older, we see that a lack of empathy, you know, just an inability to appreciate the emotional reactions of others, particularly fear and sadness in other people, that predicts bullying behavior. And so does a sense of moral disengagement, and that's something we see when kids get a little older. This idea that some people are less important than others or don't deserve the same level of respect. Bullies also hang pretty firmly to the belief that using aggression is just a good way to get what you want.
Other risk factors deal with the family or school environment. Again, here's Sandstrom.
The kinds of characteristics of families that are associated with bullying are things like low levels of trust in the family, poor communication skills, parents who don't monitor or supervise their children very carefully, high levels of conflict in the home, violence and abuse in the home. So it's a very complicated set of factors that all interact with each other.
These factors point to the idea that bullies can come in all shapes and sizes, and that, according to Sandstrom, they rarely fit the stereotype of a schoolyard bully.
One myth about bullying is that bullies tend to be these oafish kinds of big kids that maybe aren't very smart and have low self-esteem, and that they're bullying other kids to try to boost up their own sense of self. And there's actually very little evidence to support that view. It seems that bullies tend to have average, if not overinflated, sense of self.
Tyler Gregory is a living example of that. Here he is describing his high school experience.
I had good grades, and I did a lot of community service, and I was an all-around good kid. No, I definitely don't think self-esteem was an issue.
Citing a study led by Dr. Deborah Pepler, distinguished research professor in the health department at York University in Toronto, Canada, that followed several children throughout their early academic careers, Dr. Sandstrom says that for many, bullying is a passing phase that ends during or after high school.
What they discovered was really interesting. One group of kids, a little over 40% of them, just didn't report much bullying at all. And then there's a second group, about 15% of kids, who reported engaging in a moderate level of bullying in elementary school, but then they consistently decreased that bullying behavior to near zero by the time they were out of high school. Then there was another group of kids, about 35% of kids, who reported moderate levels of bullying that remained stable all the way through middle school and through high school. And then the last group, 10% of kids, reported very high levels of bullying that started early in elementary school and remained consistently high through high school.
It's that 10%, Sandstrom says, that are the most troubling, as studies have shown that chronic childhood bullies often carry their bullying into adulthood.
So it's really an example of using violence within the context of an interpersonal relationship. And that's the same dynamic that is at the core of other more adult forms of aggression, like sexual harassment and dating aggression and workplace harassment and marital abuse and child abuse.
It's the transposition of those adolescent experiences into serious problems later in adulthood that researchers say is what makes large anti-bullying campaigns and initiatives so important. Dr. Elizabeth Englander says that while it's important to work with kids on an individual basis, community and statewide campaigns, like those established over the past several years in the wake of such high-profile cases like the suicides of Phoebe Prince and Tyler Clementi, are imperative to stop bullying.
I think a public health model is a better model. So looking at social factors, looking at things like attitudes and policy and social behaviors that really contribute on a broad scale is the most efficient way to cope with these kinds of problems.
Among those types of initiatives is the Great American No Bull Challenge, a bullying awareness campaign where kids are asked to submit short documentary-style films about bullying with the chance to watch their work screened at the Sundance Film Festival. After his bullying experience, Tyler Gregory apologized to the girl and told his parents. Then he and fellow classmate Scott Hanna submitted a video to the No Bull contest and became active in local anti-bullying campaigns, eventually becoming national spokespeople for the No Bull campaign. Here's Tyler.
I feel that lifting people up lifts me up more than any of the putting down that I had ever done.
Tyler's outlook on stopping bullying echoes the views of researchers who continue to study the psychological effects and causes of bullying. Their work goes on.
It's been around for a long time, and I think it's going to continue to be around, but there's definitely things that we can do to alleviate it.
For WAMC News, I'm Patrick Donges.
As bullying becomes a more researched and discussed topic among parents, teachers, and students, communities are taking on their own efforts to define what exactly bullying is, who's affected, and what could be done to further understand and prevent it. That's exactly what one group in Pittsfield, Massachusetts is doing. Karen Cole is the coordinator of the Pittsfield Prevention Partnership at the Berkshire United Way. Together with the Northern and Southern Berkshire Community Coalitions, they're implementing the Prevention Needs Assessment Survey for 8th, 10th, and 12th grade students across Berkshire County.
For example, we're asking about the incidence of bullying, and why students feel they are being targeted for bullying by students or possibly by teachers or school staff, and the response in the school after reporting the bullying.
The Pittsfield Prevention Partnership is working with the Berkshire County District Attorney's Office and Pittsfield Public Schools to educate parents about bullying.
There's sort of three key components of bullying behavior that you want to look at to see if it's a true bullying situation.
Anne Marie Carpenter is a unit leader for school counselors and school psychologists at Pittsfield Public Schools, a district whose bullying prevention work has been observed as a model by the state government in Massachusetts.
It involves an aggressive behavior, and that aggression can be both direct or indirect. It typically involves a pattern of behavior that's repeated over time, and then it has to have some kind of imbalance of power or strength between the individuals involved.
Robert Kinzer works in the Berkshire District Attorney's Office and said that in partnering with the schools and Berkshire United Way, one of the main targets of their prevention work focuses not on the aggressor or victim, but rather on the bystander.
Those individuals that are aware of the bullying, either from seeing it, from maybe even participating in it on some level, witnessing, hearing about it, those are individuals that feel scared. They feel powerless. They sometimes are afraid that the bully is going to turn on them.
Kinzer said that though a bystander may not be the direct target of aggression, witnessing bullying can have a significant effect on their lives both in and out of school.
And they can see their grades suffer, they can see their relationships suffer, their empathy starts to diminish, and frankly their educational, emotional, and social growth is really stunted because they don't know how to address this type of situation.
And in that way, Kinzer says bullying at school affects everyone. But are some communities or individuals more likely to experience bullying than others? And what's the impact of bullying on school achievement? In 2011, at the American Sociological Association's annual meeting, Lisa Williams of Ohio State University and Anthony Pagero of Virginia Tech revealed their findings in the report, The Impact of School Bullying on Racial and Ethnic Minorities. Dr. Pagero said that for young ethnic and racial minorities, many of them face stereotypes in school that perceive them as having to achieve in school in a certain way.
Is bullying, that's where Lisa and I had this question, is bullying and this type of victimization detrimental towards racial and ethnic minorities who break these stereotypes? So in other words, within this study, and this is what we found in that study, is that Black African-American and Latino American students who are higher achieving, who are victimized, are their achievement score have a much more significant decline.
The study relied on information from the Educational Longitudinal Study of 2002, which collected data on involvement of bullying in students of different racial and ethnic backgrounds. The study found that Black students with a GPA score of 3.5 in their freshman year and were bullied as sophomores saw a decrease in their senior year GPA by 0.3 points. For Latinos, the decline by 12th grade increased at 0.5 points. Meanwhile, white students with a 3.5 GPA in the 9th grade and who were bullied in the 10th saw a decline in their 12th grade GPA by only 0.049 points. Pagero said that schools with a more racially and ethnically diverse student body are typically located in communities with less money to combat bullying and school violence.
A lot of these schools that are poorer have less resources to respond to violence and aggression within their schools are also in communities that have higher levels of violence, have less resources to respond to community violence as well as school violence. So the response to bullying to racial and ethnic minorities is not as, I guess, expeditious in terms of when we think about bullying that occurs in more affluent suburban schools where these other measures of school disorder is not as common.
Figueroa said that there's research that suggests school violence is not addressed as often for minority students because it's more commonly accepted.
The perception and the understanding of violence in racial and ethnic minorities' lives is perceived to be, especially amongst faculty administrators, as more normative. And what I mean by normative is that this is part of the daily life.
And Anthony Pagero said that his next question would be to ask what's going to happen in years ahead in terms of stereotypes and the achievement gap among minorities when white students are no longer in the majority.
How is it as a society, as a school culture, do we construct the notion of racial ethnic minorities who are successful in our society? Right? Is this something that we need, and especially in the broader context, that within the next 10 to 15 years, the racial ethnic minority population is going to be considered the majority of students within the school?
There may not be an answer to that question right now, but Robert Kinzer in the Berkshire County District Attorney's Office said that his strategy in combating school bullying begins at introducing bullying recognition and prevention programming to students as early as kindergarten.
To me, the key is these younger kids and these programs we're doing, even at the kindergarten level. That's where we're going to start to make the difference.
And Anne-Marie Carpenter of Pittsfield Public Schools says that her district will continue to work on understanding the who, what, and why of something that seems common on the surface, but boils down to a more complex issue.
We're learning, I think, about the impact on individuals both who are aggressors of behavior and who are targets of behavior, and then learning much more about just witnessing behavior and what that does to a person individually and their sort of psychological makeup, as well as what that does to the overall school climate issues in a building. So this is a serious matter.
Reporting from WAMC's Berkshire Bureau at the Berkshire Eagle, I'm Lucas Willard.
New York State's Dignity for All Students Act, DASA, went into effect this year. Lori Java is the educational chair for Taconic Region PTA, which oversees 13 school districts. She pioneered anti-bullying pilot programs in the Lower Hudson Valley. An advocate whose mission is addressing bullying, Java has issues with the DASA law.
Since it's been in effect in July, I see that there's problems in schools at different levels, mostly at the high school level. We're finding that the state mandates certain things and the district then just puts the provisions in place, but are they just to be in accordance with the law are they really to support the children? What it basically says is that all schools have to have somebody in each building thoroughly trained. Now, thoroughly trained means what? You would think that there would be an individual that's the DASA coordinator for each school. You know, this summer, they had all of the principals in our school district in Wappingers go to be thoroughly trained. Well, that's all well and good to be in compliance with the law, but is that really a disservice to our students? Because the administrators, they already have that job. I would have thought that it would have been an individual in each building. This way, it's a second pair of eyes.
Every day, nearly 160,000 children miss school because they are scared of bullying, according to figures provided by the National Educational Association. JAVA urges parents to be more proactive and schools to deal with bullying transparently.
It becomes a lot of red tape. It becomes a lot of paperwork. And you know what? It shouldn't matter. It's about a student's life. I mean, there's children that are committing suicide because of things. Parents need to be more involved. They need to have password shares. They need to walk a mile with their child, not just watch from a distance. They need to walk with them. They need to see what goes on, hear what goes on. You know, never say, oh, not my child. You know what? It could be anybody. You don't know what they're living. You don't know what they're reading. You don't know how they're being harassed 24 hours a day. We've already put curriculum K through 6 in Wappingers. We piloted it last year in 3 schools. It's called PeaceWorks. We ended up obtaining a grant, and now we've put it all 10 elementary schools district-wide. So now it'll be a curriculum. It'll be a common language. If you go to one school or another, you're going to learn the same character traits or how we deal with conflict in third grade or second grade. And I think that this is what needs to be carried on right through 12.
Jeffrey Philp is chairperson of the College Prep Department at Miami-Dade. He's authored several children's books and developed a school workshop program that targets bullying. As a child, he attended an all-boys boarding school where he was terrorized and hazed by older students.
If the child is a target of a bully, I outline things that they can do. Talk with your teacher, talk with your bus driver, talk with your parents. If that doesn't work, at least the peers can say to the teachers or those in charge, you know, so-and-so is really bullying. Part of the whole psychology of bullies, many of them have suffered from bullying themselves, and they really don't know, or their emotional intelligence has not been developed to the point where they can actually empathize. So it's really sensitizing everyone on both sides of the equation, both the bully and also the target, and everyone in general, that this is indeed a serious problem.
Every bullied child fantasizes vanquishing his or her tormentors. Once dismissed as a rite of passage, experts now agree bullying has gotten out of hand, and it may take a culture change in schools and communities to stop it. Digital online media, particularly Facebook, has played a role in bringing bullying to national attention. Former Albany County legislator Brian Scavo had a hand in getting a local law passed that criminalized cyberbullying.
Think carefully before you post any pictures, names, addresses, etc., because once you push send, it's in cyberspace forever. The worst part is that bullying can be viewed not only by bullies and their victims, but also by other kids and adults from all over the states and even the world. This makes the humiliation even more terrible.
Author Taryn Grimes Herbert parented a bullied child and participates in anti-bullying workshops.
I don't remember anyone hanging themselves in a closet in elementary school when I was growing up. It's something that needs to be addressed just by statistics alone. I mean, after I started doing the workshops, within about a year and a half to 2 years, I met at least 5 children under the age of 10 who had told their parents that they had suicidal thoughts. And how can we ignore that?
Grimes Herbert believes that parents should serve as the strongest role models and deterrents to bullying.
Not only how you treat other people, but how you behave when you're not being treated well. Because they do look to us, you know, they're basically taking their cues from us. If someone is bullying your child and you help your child to behave in a very strong way, you know, find the humor, and I know that sounds weird because there's no real humor about it, but find a way to keep the joy in life for your son or daughter. And give them a really good example. Don't embrace the revenge mentality. You want your child to be able to come through this experience in a way that benefits his or her life and not in a way that scars them permanently. That's what childhood is about.
The experts agree bully education should begin in kindergarten. Grimes Herbert cautions against labeling any child as bully or victim.
Once we label that child the bully, you can darn well bet that that's who they will be.
Next school year in New York, DASA will require school employees who learn of online harassment to notify administrators within 1 day and file a written report within 2 days. Schools must also train staff and set up a way for parents and students to report bullying. Bullying and cyberbullying laws, as well as prevention and intervention resources, are being implemented or are under consideration in just about every state. I'm Dave Lucas, WAMC News.